The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Fresh from GB News with a lovely
Fresh
Mark
from GB. You're just such a media tart,
you
aren't
know,
you?
Know, they send me a little limousine, darling.
I know, today, every day.
I know, and then, you know, I have to drive myself here.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure of the way I come here.
In the green room, did I give you gin and tonics and stuff?
Oh, well, of course, I'm always smashed when I'm live.
I know, you will. Well, you know, because it's in the evening and you've been drinking since breakfast.
Oh, they have nibbles. Yeah. They have lovely Doritos and little crisps. And you know what? Do you remember years ago I did a little story when I was the business editor of the Whitstable Times and the Canterbury Times on custard.
I was going to say, they don't have custard, surely.
Well, they don't have custard, but guess what? They've got a new...
Just for the benefit of our guest and some of our listeners, Jules was the protagonist of a book called Whitstable Mum in Custard Shortage. I just thought I'd let you know that.
I'm in there, and then this lovely young man came up to you. There's hundreds of producers, darling.
Yeah, I mean,
more than our show. Producers and junior producers and semi-producers.
Assistant junior producer.
I had a makeup
junior
lady.
Junior producer's mate,
I had a makeup lady, my own makeup this time, but she didn't need to do anything because I do my own makeup.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it looks like this.
It's like me and my hairdresser.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nothing to do there. A little comb over.
Yeah.
I used to work for Barry M, you see, they're quite famous, and also Ultra Close.
Not by the rivers of Babylon then.
Nothing to do with Babylon.
Okay.
Anyway, so this young chap came up to me, this young buck, and said, you're Jules Serkin, aren't you? I said, yes. He said, oh, I think you know my dad. I said, who might that be? He said, Roger Casper.
Casper's custard.
Custard Casper on the Twitter.
Yeah.
So that was lovely. And it's so nice to see the next generation of journalists coming up. And so that was really good. But this time I was at the Westminster studio.
Right, okay.
Because before I've been at the Paddington studio.
And
Westminster is a better location, but for some reason I prefer the Paddington one. Aside from that, they had to sort of creep me on stage live while Mark was chatting.
Right.
So you're off camera.
Yeah.
And this is quite different because before I was just on a stool all set up with a little thing in my ear at the Paddington one because Mark was in wherever he was, another studio. We had a little time delay, if you remember.
Yeah.
This, we're next to each other because he loves me now, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
mad about me.
Yeah.
So they say, Jules, we're going to have to smuggle you onto the stage while Mark is
not
talking.
An easy thing to do.
No. And you see, that's nerve-wracking because there's all these wires, trip wires.
Yeah.
It's like an assault course. And so you're like going over there. And I was wearing platform shoes.
As you would.
And in fact, I said to my new husband, because I was wearing quite a nice frock, but I had these big clumpy platforms on. And as I was going, I said, these don't really go with this frock, do they? And he said, no, not really. I said, shall I change? And I said, oh, I haven't got time. So, of course, what did the camera do? Honed in on these clumpy platform shoes. And my husband texted me, said, they've just honed in on your shoes. I said, no. Anyhow, so I'm staggering over these things and I've got my little flask with me.
Which,
as anyone that knows me, I always have my little flask of my trusty...
It's got gin in it.
...water. But it is, of course, lovely water. And so you can't have that in... ear, you know, camera shot, can you? So I'm trying to put that on the floor, then you have to clamber up on a big stage. And I've got a left dodgy knee.
In your nutty seagoon boots.
I thought, oh God, I've got a flask in my hand, got a handbag. So the producer took my handbag. He looked lovely with it, I've got to say. And then I'm sort of teetering with a glass and then smuggling in. And then I swigged the water because I'd been in an aircon studio with like 185 producers, tiny room. There is a green room, but we were all smuggled
just
in
what
together.
She's saying, Steph, do you see, I asked her a question. I said, did you get gin and tonic? And then 10 minutes later, we're still going.
Anyway.
I just thought I'd let you know.
So I swigged my water because I was dry as a bone. Yeah. And then it went down the wrong way and we're live and, you know, we're
you
on air.
You had a splutter, didn't you?
And although I was out of shot and my mic was off, so I was like this.
Yeah.
I wasn't like this. I was like this.
Like that, not like this.
No, okay, I wasn't like that.
I was like this.
But I was going... it was awful. And I thought, oh, well, I'm going to choke on air.
See, we've got buttons for that here.
Oh, well, yeah.
We have a red button here. So if you want to cough, you can just press the red button.
I must tell Mark.
Yeah, you, my new GB friend. News need to invest in a red
little button.
A
little personal button.
Yeah.
And anyway, so we were talking about Twitter censorship, and I've lost quite a lot of lovely buddies on Twitter for just talking about their ailments.
I just asked if you had gin and tonic in the green. That's all I asked.
No, I didn't.
Okay, thank you.
And if I had ever had anything, it would have been organic cava.
Would
from
it?
Spain, which I brought, smuggled quite a lot back from Ibiza when I went.
Did you?
Organic cava.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm
knackered now. I'm completely tired now.
If only you weren't teetotal, you could have joined me.
I could have done, yeah.
I was going to ask a very important question.
Yeah.
Who might our sponsor be?
Right, well, I'm pleased you asked, because I got a new sponsor for today.
Mm.
And this is special, I'll explain why.
Nude?
New.
Oh, nude.
New.
New sponsor. Okay.
Nude
well, it's
sponsor.
Been quite hot, hasn't it?
Why would
it?
I mean, have a nude sponsor?
Well, it's been quite hot, as I said. It's 26 degrees today. Easterly wind, though. It's quite nips in Whitstable. A little easterly wind. Maybe even a north-easterly.
Thank you.
Or nor-easterly.
Right. See, this show is produced to within an inch of its life.
Mm.
Because I knew, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that the Lionesses were going to win on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought, we need a show all about women winners.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So our two guests today are both female business leaders that are winners.
Yeah.
Okay. And, of course, the Lionesses won. And our sponsor for this week is the lovely Jennifer Nash. And she has an organisation called Global Ignite Vision and Action, GIVA, G-I-V-A.
Yeah.
It's a space for female entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs to be seen, heard, known and recognised as global experts in their field by sharing their authentic stories that inspire others for greater good.
Yeah.
So they have... our very first Giver Awards ceremony was held in 2021 and put a spotlight on more than 30 amazing female entrepreneurs together in one event. So they're announcing their new Giver Awards for this year, 2020, and you can find out more by going to her company website, which is Arc and Brook, and that's Arc, A-A-A-R-K, the full word, A-N-D, Brook, B-R-O-O-K, arcandbrook.com.
Excellent.
And a huge thank you to Jennifer for that.
Brilliant. And I was going to say, I've got a little, it's a little moan, actually. So I minced into Whitstable High Street yesterday for a little bit of brunch. I was having a business meeting at the lovely Farm and Harper with someone. And I normally walk in if I can, but I didn't have time, so I took the old automobile and I found a lovely parking place, which is amazing. You know, Whitstable, it's quite busy at the weekends, and Mondays has a little hangover from the weekend. I found a lovely parking place and I slid in, but they only give you an hour to support the high street.
Yep.
And as you know, Whitstable has lots of indie shops, lovely little shops. So I slid in. I thought, well, it's fine, you know, I'll get away with 2 hours. And then this traffic warden came lumbering down the road with her pad and a... I don't think they have pads anymore. It's a little electronic thing.
It's a tablet now, isn't it? With a camera.
I know. Yeah. If anybody's got a zapper of how I can destroy it, you know, with some... Anyway, so she's there. So I thought, there's no way I can just do this in an hour.
Mm.
I can't have bacon and egg and coffee and stuff and chat for an hour.
Mm.
Plus, I wanted to support the local high street. So I had to move. And then I thought about it. And I thought, you know, really, I think 2 hours would be a bit fairer, because if you're going to support the local high street, you hop into the little fruit mongers, you hop into the butcher, you have a little chat, then you go and have a coffee. You need 2 hours. If they would just trundle up to where I live, which is Tankerton on Sea, they would find people not supporting the high street. They would find people parked on double yellow lines, parked all over the grass, parked on the pavement, blocking things, ruining the curbs because they've gone up. But they don't bother to go there. They go and annoy the people that are supporting the high street.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Canterbury Council have got it the wrong way around.
Not for the first time.
Yeah. Do you see what I mean, though?
I do.
They're stopping people staying an hour in a proper parking place.
But we've discussed this many times.
Well, let's discuss it again.
The whole ethos of government at every level is to stop you owning a car.
Mm.
That's it.
Yeah.
They don't want you to have a car.
Well, then they need to have an every 10-minute bus service.
Well, they don't want you to go anywhere. They want you to work at home, don't they?
Mm.
They don't want you to own a car. Therefore, car parking charges are horrendous. They're very few and far between. Oh, by the way, talking about Canterbury, I went into the office the other day.
What day did you go in?
Wednesday, I think.
Because I trundled by on Friday and I was going to go in. It looked lovely, the coffee, and I saw people all beavering away at Fruitworks.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I used to park at Rosemary Lane car park.
Which is now just empty.
Which is empty, and the council have it up for sale. Anyway, I parked in Castle Row, and I normally walk across Rosemary Lane because it's a shortcut. Yeah. You can't anymore. They've put steel barriers up, so you can't even walk across it.
Why don't they just let you park there while it's up for sale?
Yeah,
it's just a big, empty concrete space.
Yeah, they've got no buyers at all for that site.
How much do they want for it?
I don't know, but of course it has outline planning permission for flats, yeah. But of course, as Steph will tell us from the building industry, you can't build anything in Canterbury at the moment anyway because of the Stobmarsh Water Reserve. So no one's going to buy it until that issue's resolved because you can't build anything.
So meanwhile, why don't they just...
So why don't they just use it as a car park, which
is
what it was in the first place?
I know, because I go to...
And the answer to that is they don't want you to have a car.
Yeah, I know. It is awful. And you know... I do walk a lot, and I totally get the old car thing. But as a busy mum, you are often dropping kids off at school, then going on to work, then you go and get something else, pick up a bit of shopping, dry cleaning, then you come back from work, pick up the kids again. You know, it's not feasible to do it all on a bicycle or walking.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Being of the older persuasion.
Are you?
I was trying to think what happened in my day when I was a tiny tot at school.
Well, that was the penny farthing, wasn't it?
No, it hadn't been invented. The fact is, we walked to school.
We walked to school on our own.
I walked to school
from the age of five
on my own. But I'm just thinking, there's no matter what, you could, my 10-year-old could not walk to school.
No.
Yeah. One, it's 12 miles away and two, it's all along a main road where there is no pavement.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, well, how did we get to that point? But I guess the point is that in our day, there are a lot fewer people in the country, and you tended to just go to a local primary school that was
local
within distance.
Yeah, but, little gang.
But as houses have been built further and further out, the distance from a school has been greater. And Lucy next year is due to go to a secondary school. And we are not, where we live, we are not in a catchment area for any secondary school apart from one which she isn't going to.
Because it's not very good.
It's not that good. But you have a choice of one, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I went to the local primary school, which was called Rothmans.
Mm.
Is that after the cigarettes?
Yeah, yeah. Was
bizarre.
It sponsored?
Probably. 70s. This
yeah,
is the 70s.
Is it all these 77-year-olds used to queue up for a fag with their bottle of milk?
I know. But I literally walked from the age of five. I think, I can't remember my mum ever taking me. I don't think my mum even went to the parents even.
No.
Mum and dad were very laid back.
Yeah.
Literally, we used to walk in a little gang. So Tony Brown was the gang leader and he was a little bit older. And there was a gaggle of us that used to walk on our own. And I think I had a key from the age of four, not really, but, you know, I had a key quite young. But even my kids, I gave them a house key very early on.
Yeah.
I was quite tough with my kids. And they got buses and things. But from Whitstable to, I mean, Josh went to Kent College. Josh had an assisted place at Kent College, you know, because he was very bright.
Mm.
He got into grammar school, but he needed small classes. So I got him into Kent College. Free place, assisted place.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were taken away when Labour got in.
Mm-hmm.
I've never understood why. Why would Labour take them away? Because I thought they were all for helping.
Well, politicians don't like grammar schools, do they? They don't like all those kind of things.
No, elitists, they think, I guess.
Exactly.
Mm. Anyway, it's the best thing for him, Kent College. Very, very good.
Mm.
And then I did the PR, as you know, for St Christopher's and got Shay into St Christopher's.
She's a blagger. She really is a blagger.
I just did a swap. I said, you educate the kid, I'll do your PR.
Yeah.
And then that got him into Langton's, which was a brilliant school, Simon Langton. Great school, isn't it, Steph? So we're going to be hearing all about building later on from Stephanie.
Yeah, we are, or not,
Harris,
as the case may be at the moment.
And we're going to be talking about swimming, which is great for this weather, isn't it? I mean, I've been swimming in the sea every day.
Yeah, we've got, as I said in my preamble when I was allowed to talk.
In those days.
Yes. We've got two fantastic lady businesswomen.
Award winners.
That are both award winners.
Yeah.
And That's fantastic, and we're really looking forward to hearing from them. We've got Victoria, who is in a pre-recorded interview because she couldn't make it to the studio, Victoria Rowley of Puddle Ducks. Mm-hmm. And then later on in the show, we're going to be talking to the lovely Steph Harris of B&M Consultants. But shall we read a couple of tweets and emails? Shall we get started? Because there's a lot.
I've just done a tweet, and I'm a bit upset because I put your photo on, but it hasn't come up. I'll do it in a minute, because you'll get huffy if you're,
yeah, yeah, you're not on there. She's got an entire album of dodgy photographs of me, and every week she has to post at least half a dozen of them just to embarrass me.
I've got a fabulous one of him in a tutu.
Mm-hmm.
I'll share it later.
Pink tutu.
After toasting the success of last year's inaugural drinks test, Rochester Cocktail Week is back this summer. It's bigger and better than ever. 40 venues in the town or within walking distance are entering into the spirit. See what they did there? Walking distance.
Yeah, and spirit.
Spirit. Serving up 50 exotic tipples over, confusedly, a fortnight from this coming Monday the 1st. I don't know what that means, over, confusedly, a fortnight.
Well, because it's cocktail week.
Oh, okay.
That lasts a fortnight, which is the kind of thing that happens with cocktails, really, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. The second week is just a hangover.
Yeah.
Wristbands.
Well, the second week is because you don't remember the first week.
It's a bit like my slope off lunches.
Yeah, exactly.
I was trying to explain one to someone when she was asking how I ended up at the Falstaff Hotel in Canterbury at 10 three, o'clock at night.
I was having lunch.
Yeah, and then rang the owner who was in bed to say, yeah, you ain't got any nibbles. Anyway, wristbands are now on sale for punters to take advantage of £5 deals. Cocktails normally sell for an average of £15. The Fire Station Brasserie in Chatham has created the fire hydrant with hibiscus syrup, vodka, lime, sliced jalapeno to give an extra kick.
Blimey.
The Rochester Bar in the High Street.
Sounds like a meal.
I know. The Rochester Bar in the High Street has concocted its version of Medway iced tea with vodka, gin, Archer's Tipple, say, and white rum. Indeed, everything but tea, they say. And the Nag's Head... I work with one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Nag.
I see what you did there. I'm ignoring you.
The Nag's Head at Chatham end of Rochester High Street has gone for a porn star martini. One of my one weaknesses, Steph, porn star martini. I do like them, do you?
Yes, absolutely. Yes,
they're very, very lovely. With vodka, vanilla. I love anything vanilla. Except Twitter handles. Vanilla is my... I mean, me and panna cotta, you know... Vanilla,
absolutely.
Not messed around, just a plain vanilla.
What was that thing that you kept having in a restaurant every 10 minutes?
The baked yogurt.
Baked yogurt.
The oven baked.
She went to a restaurant once and had baked yogurt for dessert, so she went back the next day and had baked yogurt, and the day after and had baked yogurt, and the day after that, and she was only eating baked yogurt. She didn't have any of the rest of the meals.
She just kept
eating baked yogurt.
Do you know that lovely chef has gone from there? They're not redoing, they're just doing nibbles now and tapas. Mm. I can do tapas at home. I can just go to Waitrose and get tappers, you know. That was great. I'm going to track that chef down because he was on Scoff and Quaff and I've forgotten his name, but I've got his number. But yeah, anything vanilla I have a weakness for, apart from Twitter handles.
Mm-hmm.
So the Nag's Head at Chatham, they're doing this lovely vodka, vanilla, prosecco and passion fruit juice. The Dead Pigeon.
What?
Not sure about that name.
Is that a cocktail or a pub?
That's what you get in your water tank.
Exactly. Yeah.
I once had one in my water tank.
Yeah.
I've always brought my kids up, Steph, never to drink water from the hot tap. And they are all with various boyfriends and girlfriends. And when they get together, the girlfriends and the boyfriends say, "What is that about your mum telling you never to drink from the hot water tap? Dead pigeons." But, you know, I've always told them. Anyway, the Dead Pigeon... is not a cocktail, I don't think.
Okay.
They have it must be a pub. The favoured local ingredients for its mint condition, which is a Ranscombe gin, a Kentish lemon cider, homemade cucumber syrup and mint. While Spanish and South American diner Rico Sabor in Rochester, it's getting very cosmopolitan, Rochester.
It is, yeah.
Rico Sabor has stuck to its refreshing holiday favourite of sangria. Lovely. I have to say, Paul Andrews and Stephanie, at the weekend, the family all came down. So my daughter's heartbroken. She split up with her man after 3 years. So she's coming down most weekends. And I made my famous grapefruit daiquiri. So I get a delivery of 20 grapefruits. So my fruit monger thinks I'm really, really healthy. He's wondering why I'm so tubby if I have grapefruit for breakfast. And I do freshly squeezed grapefruit and with freshly squeezed lime, white rum and coconut sugar. whiz it up with loads of ice. Absolutely delicious. It's a daiquiri.
That's it.
Grapefruit daiquiri.
I swatched that.
Yeah, with the chimpanzee.
Yeah, yeah.
And they, a bit like Steph's dress today, a little zebra. They had the, do you remember the Jeep?
Was yeah,
the
yeah, zebra. Well, it, the Jeep was yeah. zebra stripes, yeah.
For the younger listeners, Paul and I are a similar ilk, and it was called Daktari.
Daktari, yeah. I knew it was something
have,
like that.
We used to have Champion the Wonder Horse.
And Daktari.
And Daktari. Yeah. So all the older listeners will be know what we're talking about. And the monkeys had their own show, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Nothing to do with monkeypox.
I didn't believe in monkeypox, but now I'm a believer. Yeah, I've heard that joke.
You do know that monkeypox is just shingles.
Yeah, yeah,
most probably from the AstraZeneca, had monkey adenovirus in it. Had I known that, I would never have had it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's all go along to that Rochester Cocktail Week. It is Monday the 1st of August for a fortnight, even though it's a cocktail week. Sounds great.
I've had a tweet from Michael Park Surveyors. We're tuning in live today, Paul. We love the Business Bunker Show. Can we have a shout out, please? Of course you can. That's Michael Park Surveyors, a commercial property specialist based in Medway, covering the southeast of England.
Councillors have been accused of ignoring public opinion by agreeing to scatter. Oh, yeah, this got my goat, this one. So, listener, you'll remember a couple of weeks ago I read about Canterbury's decision, so you'll hear it in this. Agreeing to scatter Canterbury's historic street market, which is in the main drag, by M&S. And
outside of McDonald's and M&S,
Across an area spanning half a mile. So they're going to break up this popular attraction and we'll see traders dispersed to 41 street pitches scattered across the city centre. The move, which will come into effect next January, was rubber stamped at a cabinet meeting last night, despite staunch opposition from existing stallholders and residents. Critics blasted the council's ambition to push forward with its vision in the face of a fierce backlash from the public during a consultation about changes to the market, which is thought to have been operating in Canterbury for almost 700 years. Results from the survey shared with councillors last night show how a large proportion of respondents do not want the market to be broken up and would rather have stalls grouped together in one hub. But the authority ignored the opinions and unanimously voted through the decision to create pitches across the city centre. Ridiculous.
Yep.
So they put up the parking. Cut down the trees. You've got less time parking because you're always worried that it's gone over £7. And then you've got to trog from one end to get your veg, another bit to get your flowers, and another bit to get whatever else.
Your hot dog.
Yeah, and you've got to lug it all. So my mum, who's 91, always goes to the plant man. He's lovely, the plant man, cash only. And she'll go to the fruit mongers. She's no way she could stagger all around there. Why do they just do what they want and don't listen to public opinion? Because I know what they're thinking is. They're thinking most probably is to get people to go to other corners of Canterbury.
Yeah, but that just doesn't work. It's like Tesco's. Tesco's do that as well.
Yeah,
they move everything on the shelves.
Oh, it drives me nuts.
And eventually I just stand there and go, if you think I'm going to search for this, I'm not. I'm just going to go home and buy it from Amazon. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I say, why have you moved the whatever I'm looking for? And it used to be there, now it's there. I think it's a ridiculous, ridiculous move there. And I just think it's time they started listening to their people that are paying. With the car park prices, that's not going to work either, is it?
There you go. Anyway.
Should we talk to our first guest?
No.
Should we listen to our first guest?
No.
Oh, cheesy tune.
We could do it.
Do you know, it's seven days since I've done this.
I know you've been waffling for 25 minutes and we're now well behind time.
Mark Stein lets me go on half an hour the other day.
Yeah,
you know.
Good. Right.
He lets me just...
Good. Yeah. Well, I've got some cheesy tunage and this is well cheesy.
Is it? What is it?
Well, you tell me.
Splish, splish. Yes, I was taking a bath.
You got it, yeah.
Is it Little Richard or who is it?
No, this one is Bobby Darin.
Oh, Bobby Darin, lovely.
Yeah.
Everything was all right. Well, I stepped out the tub and put my feet on the floor. I wrapped the towel around me and I opened the door. And in a splish splash, I jumped back in the bath. Well, how was I to know there was a party going on? There was a splishing and a splash and reeling with the feeling, moving and a grooving, rocking and a rolling. I saw the whole gang dancing on my living room rug. Yeah, in the bar. All the teens had to dance in front. There was a lollipop with a Peggy Sue. Good golly, Miss Molly was even there too. Well, a splish splash, I forgot about the bath. I went and put my dancing shoes on. Yeah, I was a rolling and a strolling, dealing with the feel, moving and a grooving, splishing and a splashing.
Bobby Darin there, Splish Splash.
Oh, I love that. And of course we are in the weather where you really do need a splash. I'll be going in the sea tonight, you know.
Was
it was lovely and choppy last night, huge waves. And I kept going because I had a blow dry on Wednesday for Mark Stein.
Mm-hmm.
I don't bother for here because it's radio. Mm. But I kept saying to my husband, don't splash me, don't splash me, because, you know, then I can eke it out for a week.
I have the same problem when I go in my swimming pool.
Yeah.
I don't like getting my hair wet.
Well, you know, I've turned my indoor pool boiler off to save money, so it's off all summer.
You're right.
I'm going in the sea. That's my New Year's resolution. And then I'll put it on about sort of October, I'll turn it on.
Is your pool chlorine or salt water?
It's chlorine, and I would love to turn it into salt water if I could find someone with a brain that would do it for me. But they all go, oh, well, it's about the same. It's the same as chlorine anyway. Mm. It's not, is it?
I don't like salt water in pools, but...
Oh, I do, because I don't really like chlorine. It's not very nice for your skin or your hair.
Yeah.
Maybe Stephanie knows. We'll ask her after, because she's a surveyor, you know, and does all that.
Yeah, yeah. She builds swimming pools, does she?
Yeah, well, she'd have a fit if she saw mine.
Would she?
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Splish Splash by Bob Darin. And
leading you gently on to...
Yeah, our first guest.
Have you got your water wings?
Our first guest, which is Victoria Rowley of Puddle Ducks. Let's hear what Victoria had to say.
Smashing.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker show for the very first time, Victoria Rowley of Puddle Ducks, Businesswoman of the Year, Victoria.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here on Tuesday afternoon.
Absolutely. It was lovely to see you at the Ashford, Canterbury, Mid-Kent, East-Kent Business Awards, where you were celebrated as Businesswoman of the Year.
Thank you. It was a really lovely evening. You did a great job hosting as well.
Thank you. That's very kind. What a fantastic accolade for you. Go on.
Sorry, I was going to say we were very pleased. We had a few people there from the team that night. So it was,
I noticed great. The whooping and the jumping up and down and all the rest of it, which is quite right. And, and you know, very worthy to celebrate something as prestigious as that. So many congratulations on your award. So let's concentrate on Puddle Ducks, which is your business. Why don't you first start off by telling the listeners what Puddle Ducks actually is, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so at Puddle Ducks, we teach babies and children swimming lessons.
Right.
So we start from birth and go through to generally the end of primary school, sometimes a little bit later. People want to stay with us for a little bit longer. Mm. We're also about to relaunch our aquanatal classes that we had to stop at the start of the very first lockdown, which seems a bit like a lifetime ago now.
Yeah,
absolutely. So hoping to start those again very soon. So do aquanatal classes for mums to be as well.
Right. Okay. Swimming is a really important skill to have, and I'm a great believer in swimming, not least of which because I have my own swimming pool, luckily.
very jealous.
Yeah. Interestingly, I have two sons who are now very grown up, and I taught them to swim by throwing them in the swimming pool when they're about 18 months old. In fact, the youngest was born underwater as well. And it obviously worked because both of them went on to swim for Kent.
We'll have to sign you up as a teacher, I think.
Yeah, yeah. my methods are pretty robust. Now, funnily enough,
quite do it like that.
Now, funnily enough, my 10-year-old stepdaughter, she wouldn't let me teach her to swim at all. And we had this really bizarre thing for a couple of years where she was perfectly safe in the pool, but she just couldn't swim. You tried to teach her a stroke and she just wouldn't have it. But she was perfect. She'd spend hours in the pool just sinking. I tried manfully to teach her and she wouldn't have it. And then she had one lesson at school and she's away and she's doing breaststroke, crawl, everything. So, yeah.
Swimming teacher
is magical. Yeah, exactly. Coming back to Puddle Ducks, what inspired you to open this as a business?
So years ago when we had our eldest son, so we've got two sons, I was a Tesco manager at the time, and as much as I love my job, I started to think about the balance between family time and being there for Christmas and spending as much time with him as possible as he was going to get older. I really wanted to take him to baby swimming lessons. So out of all of the clubs that I did, managed to do lots and lots of free ones, but baby swimming was the one thing I was happy to invest some money in. I thought it was really important. Not only is it really good all-round exercise that babies can do from birth, but it's, like you say, a very, very important life skill. I went along to the first lesson and was running football teams and coaching a men's Sunday league team and things at the time. So I was always sort of involved in sport. I said to the teacher, I'd absolutely love your job. It looks like a dream. And she said that she was moving to Cornwall and they're about to advertise and that I should apply. So I applied and was joined by lots of other people, I think, applying. I was very lucky to get the job at the time. And then a few months later, the business came up for sale. And so I bought it with another lady who left the business just a couple of years ago. I bought her out a few years ago. It's just me running it now. But that's how I sort of got into it. I always wanted to run my own business, but could never quite figure out in what area. And just the first half an hour's lesson, I just love this. Just fell in love with the ethos. And it's unfortunately, we don't just throw them in. But I do hear that a lot. But we're very child-led. So we go.
No, trust me, it works. I love your story because it's serendipity, isn't it? All of those things came together for you as if it was meant to be. And I just love
exactly
that.
How it felt.
Yeah.
I don't really believe in fate, but that is exactly how it felt at the time. As soon as I got in the water with my son, and he didn't have a great first lesson either, to be honest.
Right.
He's a wonderful swimmer now, but the first lesson didn't go as dreamy as I thought it would in my head.
Yeah.
But he was only a few weeks old. So. It felt like it was great.
I don't know. I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, just as a general swimming thing, because usually, not always, but usually a lot of children, when they first learn to swim, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age, the one thing they don't like is getting their face wet,
right?
Whereas babies, you throw them in and they upside down, turn around, and they giggle, and they don't seem to mind. Is that just me, or is that a thing?
It is generally, that is generally true. Although babies go through lots of phases where they might not like being under the water as much. So if they're teething, etc., or if they've not had a good night's sleep, right. As we all are, we haven't had a good night's sleep, can be a little bit more ratty.
Absolutely.
But same with a baby. But yes, their babies are born with lots of natural reflexes, so we're able to make the most of those. So they've got their gag reflex. We will only take them under the water when they're happy to, and it's very much an elective submersion. They choose when they feel that they're ready. And even with babies, you can see that, you can see the cues and see when they're ready to go under the water. We encourage them to put their own face towards the water when they're strong enough to have good head and neck control. Like I say, very much child-led, but we're able to make the most of those reflexes that they have. But babies, if they get used to having water on their face from a very young age, then they don't know notice, any other way. And we're trying to develop and nurturing love and genuine love and respect for the water. So we teach a lot of personal survival skills within our lessons as well.
Right.
Okay. So we make sure they are learning the skills of, if they were to fall in the water, how to turn and get back to the side. We do something called monkey walking. So if they can't quite climb out of the pool, we would teach them to slide their hands along and get out of the pool somewhere else. And hopefully that's a transferable skill. Hopefully it would never happen. But if they were to slip into the side of a river, for example, or a pond, if they're feeding the ducks, or if they're getting too curious, like children do, go towards the water, we want them to know that if they were to turn, if they were to fall in, to turn and come back to the side. We practice that every few months in our pajama weeks. So we encourage them to come with their pajamas over the top of their swimming costumes,
right,
to get them used to what it feels like and the drag and how heavy it is to be swimming in clothes, so that if it was to ever happen to them, that being clothes wouldn't freak them out and they would know to carry on and practice and do those skills that we've taught them in their lessons.
Right. Oh, they still do that, do they? I remember when I was a kid having to put pajamas on and take a brick off the bottom of the swimming pool. But as you say, quite seriously, Victoria, being fully clothed in the water is a lot different to just being in trunks or, you know, a swimming costume. And if you fell in a river, fell in the sea, fell in a pond, especially for a young child, getting your clothes soaking wet is, you know, really dangerous unless you know how to handle it.
So we, as I said earlier, we teach from birth all the way towards generally end of primary school, sometimes a little bit later.
Right.
And so those skills develop as the children get older. So when they're babies, we will teach them things like floating in the water with their clothes on, their monkey walking that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And then as they get older, those skills progress. We then start to teach, it's very much personal survival skills, but we start to introduce life-saving skills as well. So we'll teach the children, if somebody was struggling in the water, don't get in. Because then if you start to struggle in the water, then there's two people to save. So how could we help that person? We can use our voice to help guide them to the side. We could throw something that floats. We could lay down so we don't fall in, lay down on our tummy and hold something out at arm's length for them to try and hold on to. We can call for help. So we teach them lots of different ways to help other people, but by keeping themselves safe at the same time, which is also really important. Drowning is still one of the highest causes of accidental death amongst children and adults in the UK. And unfortunately, we're hearing it again this summer of people drowning across the country. And what might look like lovely calm water isn't always safe. And so we teach those skills as well. So we develop the love and the nurture and all the strokes that go with swimming. And we introduce the dolphin legs for butterfly. And we do all of that, which the children love, but we do still focus on the personal survival skills and hopefully introduce it in little ways that they don't notice so much, that they're learning these really important skills that could potentially save their life one day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you say about accidental drownings and stuff like that. Of course, swimming in the sea is a bigger risk factor. My boys and I were heavily into surfing in Cornwall many years ago when I was still alive. We surfed a lot of beaches that had enormous riptides. And you know, looking at the surface of the water, you would never know. I'm a big bloke and I'm a strong swimmer, but I got caught in a couple of those and it's deadly scary, really scary.
It really is. I mean, you know these skills and you know what you should do, but Mother Nature is a whole world of its own and you don't mess with it.
Absolutely.
We teach the children to know their limits, and being able to swim 5 meters in a swimming pool is fantastic and should be celebrated. It is a great achievement, particularly for a child. And some of our children are 2 years old when they get their 5 meters and they're swimming it properly, lifting their head, and you know, so they're doing amazingly well. But transferring those skills to something like a river where there might be a moving current, or like you say, the sea, when you've got these riptides and currents, and teaching them to go with it and swim to the side and work your way back. These sort of skills are really important.
Absolutely.
To be passing down to our children, and hopefully they'll pass it down to their children and keep each other safe and be able to enjoy the water, but know when and where is safe. Teach them about the flags at the beach and which bits are safer to swim at. So they are really good skills to let them use.
I think they're
that's why I took my own son.
I think they're incredibly important skills. You know, we live on an island And there's a lot of water in this country, you know, in rivers and streams and ponds and pools and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's incredibly easy to fall in. It's incredibly easy when the weather's really hot to go, I'm going to paddle in there. At least, you know, I bizarrely, I was watching one of these videos you get on social media every now and again. And there was some lads. I don't know what country it was in. It wasn't here. But they were on a zip wire, and they were on a zip wire over a river. And the idea was they came down the zip wire and dropped into the river. And then there was one lad did it, and he couldn't swim. And when he got to the bottom, he let go, and he just went straight under. And everybody had to dive in and try and drag him out. And he's just going, you're mad. You're absolutely mad. Why would you do that if you can't swim?
So I would teach the know your limits.
Absolutely.
Might look really fun, but know your limits.
So I want to come back to the pool. And you teach all these good things and all these necessary things about being safe in the water and how to cope with various scenarios in the water. At what point with young children, babies, toddlers, do you start to teach them an actual stroke? And what's the first stroke you teach them?
We do that from an early age. About 4 years old, we do the dolphin kick. So it's easier to introduce it from a young age. But we do all the strokes. So we call it different things. So we might introduce some frog arms when they're in the baby and toddler classes for breaststroke. Front crawl is one of the easier strokes for them to learn, although breaststroke can come very naturally. But lots of children do prefer to swim on their back. Sometimes they might go through a little phase where they're not as keen being on their back, normally sort of around the kicker's age, we call it, which is sort of very early toddler age. We teach a mixture of all the strokes. Every child is different, and at the end of the day, when they're so little, does it really matter how they get themselves to the side? If they prefer swimming on their back, that's fine. If they prefer swimming on their front, that's fine. But we introduce everything. Children adapt very quickly, and they're also not known for being consistent. So what they might enjoy 1 week, they might not necessarily enjoy a few months later.
I suppose you get the hybrid stroke as well, where they're doing frog legs and crawl at the same time.
We try and correct that from a young age if we can, because that muscle memory is important to build from a very young age. So we do try and encourage the kicking up and down if they're swimming on their front or their back. And then we do encourage what we call our bend, circle, snap legs, which is the breaststroke leg kick. We encourage that with the scoop shoot arms, which are the breaststroke arms, and then we incorporate the glide in that as well. Children learn skills so quickly. I wish I could pick up skills as quickly as the children do, because I don't think I'd make the most of it when I was that age. But they are just like sponges. You tell them something and they really do absorb that information, and they build on it, and it might not necessarily look like they're taking it in all the time, but they really are. We had a child a few years ago that was about 14 months old, and she was feeding the ducks with her parents. They were holding her hands, and she slipped into Singleton Lake in Ashford. She had all of her clothes on plus coat because it was a cold day, and she was able to kick to the top, turn, and then hold onto the side. And then after that, tried to start to get herself out again as well. Her parents were obviously amazed that she'd done that. And yet I tell children that I teach all the time, and the grown-ups that are in the water, that she would probably not necessarily be one of the children that I would have said would have been able to do that skill yet, because of how she was doing it in the classes. But it just shows you that even though it might not look like they're taking it in all the time, and there might be some weeks where they need a couple of minutes out of that activity and they're watching the other children do it instead of doing it themselves, they're still taking that information in. And the consistency of going all the time is very important, because their brains are learning and developing every single day. So these skills are important for them to learn.
Absolutely. And you get lots of kids who go, I'm not doing that. But they understand what you told them, but I go, I'm not doing that.
Teaching my own children is not something that I try and do anymore. I take them to another swimming teacher that works with me at Puddle Ducks, because children are renowned for knowing to listen to other people. it does help.
both my boys were backstroke specialists. We went to a county swimming match, and he was due to take part in the backstroke, And when we got there, their butterfly swimmer didn't turn up. Now, Stu had always gone, oh, butterfly, I can't do that. It's too difficult. And the coach said, we need someone to do butterfly. And everybody looked the other way. And Stu went, well, okay, I'll do it. And he won. It was the first time he'd ever competitively swum butterfly, and he won. You just go, well, how did you manage to do that? And it, as you say, he'd just taken it in at some point and decided to do it on the day.
It's amazing. We hear a lot sometimes from parents, and I've been guilty of it too, of to get the woggles out for the children, for example, and the grown-up might say, oh, my child doesn't like the woggles. And that might have been true last week, but we still introduce it. And I've been guilty of saying the same for my children, but I try to as old and do that as in front of them, because actually sometimes if it's introduced in a slightly different way, if they've watched their friends do it, they might not have wanted to do it for the last few weeks or months even, but then they change their mind and they progress and they get older and they get stronger and they get more confident. Skills develop, but everybody's different, and what might take a child a couple of weeks to develop might take another child a few months, but then they'll be different at something else and they'll develop in different ways in other areas. So they're all progressing at their own rates, so yeah, it's very important to treat them individually, because like you say, for that reason they could turn around and surprise you.
Okay, final question, a bit out of left field. If you had an adult, like someone middle-aged that hadn't ever learned to swim, would you attempt to teach them to swim, or would you recommend something else for them?
No, that anyone can learn to swim. Heard very recently of a lady in her 80s that decided, right, now's the time.
Right, okay.
It's possible at any age. I think children do absorb information more readily sometimes, and they don't necessarily have the years of build-up of fear developing in their head to hold them back. It is very much a mental thing as well as a physical thing. But yeah, start slow. Start in the shallow end with a pool where you can hold onto the side or hold onto a bar. Take somebody in that you trust with you who isn't going to necessarily throw you in the deep end if that's not how you want to learn.
Absolutely.
And then just start slowly. Put your chin in the water, and then when you're ready, blow some bubbles with your mouth and take it slowly. But yeah, anybody can learn to swim at any age.
Fantastic. Victoria, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Huge congratulations on your Businesswoman of the Year. If people want to find out about Paddle Ducks, you know, maybe book a lesson for their child or whatever, what's the best way of contacting you?
They can go to paddleducks.com, and there's a passcode search at the top, so they can search by the pools that are closest to them. Or if they want to call us, our number is 01622 236 111, or they can email eastkent@puddleducks.com. I think the website's generally quite good, puddleducks.com, because then you can search and click
find,
the days.
Find the nearest one to you. Yeah. Victoria, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. As I say, many congratulations on your very well-deserved award. Have a safe rest of the day, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks very much, Ian. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Talis Independent Financial Advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com.
Grow your business with Kent's Best Business Events. Visit bestbusinessevents.co.uk.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with Workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Loch Associates Group. Let us look after all your people needs so you can focus on growing your business. No long-term tie-ins, just responsive, commercially-minded support. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Ah, that was Victoria Rowley there of Puddle Ducks at the East Kent Businesswoman of the Year 2022.
Yes, I heard about you throwing your babies in.
I threw my kids in the pool when they were little, chuck them in, no problem.
Put a brick round their ankle and see how they get on.
It worked. They both were very excellent swimmers and they both swam for Kent.
I started mine early and it's great. My kids all swim really well. And it was very interesting to hear what she was saying about that little girl that fell in the river with all her clothes on, because it's really hard with a coat on. She had a coat on, didn't she?
Absolutely.
So I think all children should learn to swim really early.
Everybody should learn to swim.
Does Lucy still do it at school, swimming? Do they go to the baths?
I can't remember. I told it off air or on air.
Yeah, you did say on air that you'd been trying and she wouldn't listen to you.
I've been my 10-year-old stepdaughter Lucy, we've got a swimming pool, and she spends all day every day in the swimming pool, hours and hours on end.
So it's like a little wrinkled prune when she
But she didn't have any kind of coordinated stroke, and she had to sink a lot. But she would happily play in the pool for hours on end.
And what, play at sinking?
Yeah. And I tried to teach her how to do breaststroke or crawl, and she just wouldn't do it. And she, no, I don't need to learn how to swim. I'm happy. I can do this. Okay. And then her school, she's a primary school at Betherston, her school decided they were going to do swimming lessons. And she went, she only had two. And she can swim like a fish now.
Yeah.
She's up and down the pool with a perfect crawl and then a backstroke. And I go, hold on, I was trying to teach you that. No, but you were rubbish.
Where is the nearest pool to you, apart from your house? For kids, but the school. Where do they go?
The school go to, they use Ashford Girls School pool.
Okay.
But the nearest pool to us is Tenterden Leisure Centre.
Hmm. Oh, so you've got one in Tenterden?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's one opposite, if you want to pay the price. There's London Beach Hotel.
Yeah, how big is that, though?
Which one?
Spa one. Because they're often a bit small, aren't they, spa ones?
No, the spa one's quite large.
Okay. And so you could turn your heating off and just nip over there.
Well,
save money.
I used to have a membership. It's a bit expensive. Mm. I had a membership over there for a couple of years. But,
I'd be interested to see what my bill will be for turning one of my boilers off, because we got three boilers in our house, which is ridiculous.
I got a heat pump.
Yeah, I know you have.
Mm.
You want this medication for that?
Exactly.
But you know, it was my decision. I turned it off. I said I can swim in the sea all summer. And what I do at home is, when I'm working from home, I put a bikini on in the morning and then get dressed over it. So there's no excuse. You know, when the tide comes in, I only have to take my dress off, and I'm schlepped.
You're
down
in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like Reggie Perrin.
Yeah. Is that where did he wear a bikini?
No, he went in naked, didn't he?
Oh, I don't.
He just piled his clothes on the beach and went in. And
I know far too many people to do that.
Yeah.
There's a long-awaited solution to an environmental issue, Paul Andrews, which is stalling thousands of new homes across Kent. I thought this was quite apt because
we were talking about it earlier.
Our next guest.
This is the one I was talking about. Yeah. But we're not going to talk to Steph until after the news.
I know, but I thought it was quite apt to get our listeners,
get the juices going.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, I can't picture that.
Yeah.
The government has revealed house builders can offset the damage caused by harmful substances seeping into the county's rivers and lakes by buying nutrient credits to fund mitigation measures such as new wetlands or woodland. It will allow developers to begin work on projects delayed since 2020, when Natural England discovered high water pollution levels at the Stodmarsh Nature Reserve, which is near Canterbury.
Mm-hmm.
The issue has stalled house building projects in a number of areas, including the city of Ashford, Thanet, Dover — that's Canterbury City — Ashford, Thanet, Dover, Deal, Folkestone and Maidstone. Since the Stodmarsh pollution issues came to light, Natural England have been instructing local planning authorities not to grant approval for new housing without mitigating measures. So we'll be talking to Stephanie later, won't we, about this, because I don't really know what these nutrient credits are. So we'll find out, will we? Don't tell me now.
Yeah, we will.
Don't tell me now.
Just so to set everybody up for it as well, a lot of developers are actually putting in their own water treatment plants. And I've got a story about my water treatment plant that I'm about to put in as well. And what I don't understand is anything to do with this. It's like carbon credits. It's To me, it's hold on a minute. You're just paying blackmail money. How does it stop? It doesn't stop toxic wastewater getting into the water, does it?
We're always getting sewage leaks before all the houses were built.
So surely the water companies are the ones that should be fixing this. Nobody else.
Exactly. And it kind of is a little bit like the Big Brother stuff that we're seeing, where a lot of my followers think that we're going to have social credit systems like they have in China.
Yeah.
That if you've driven so many miles, you then have to stay in for whatever, and can't use your car, and that, you know, it's all very, very sinister that we may be having food shortages most probably this winter. The price of fuel has gone up and everything. It's all very spooky. And I certainly know lots of friends who are bottling fruit and veg because they're so worried about food shortages. And let's hope that doesn't happen. But I know farmers are certainly selling a lot of prime farmland.
Sure. Paragon Drones have tweeted, swimming lessons and construction consultancy in one radio show. It could only be the Business Bunker. We'd love a mention, please. So that's Paragon Drones, duly mentioned. And they enjoyed the cheesy tune as well, apparently. Martin Reeves, collector's buddy, I'd very much appreciate a Business Bunker shout out, please. We're listening live. That's Martin Reeves, collector's buddy. Do give him a follow on Twitter. Sarah Marsh Collins, might be a touch late joining the show as I have a community waffle meeting.
Oh.
Now, I wonder whether they just talk in the community or whether they eat waffles, or probably both.
Waffles with maple syrup and a chopped banana and
now you're going over the top
sprinkling
now.
Of almonds.
Yeah.
The county's first Wendy's store has been unveiled after scaffolding was taken down. People in Maidstone were able to see the brand new storefront of the American Diner and Burger Chain over the weekend. The eatery is due to open in Week Street in place of the former Carphone warehouse in the coming weeks. Planning and construction started on the diner back in May. After years of speculation, it was coming to town. And the American chain, which was founded in 1969, announced plans last November to open 50 new branches across the UK. I still miss a Wimpy. I mean, I'm not a vegan, but I used to love a Wimpy bean burger. I used to really love a Wimpy.
There's a Wimpy in Maidstone.
There used to be one in Faversham, but I think it's gone now. But I do love a Wendy's, spicy bean burger.
Wendy's are one of the best fast food burger chains going. They're really, really interesting burgers. They used to, I don't know if it's still there, they used to have a Wendy branch in the Strand in London.
Yeah, that's right. I think I used to go there, actually, in my day.
You can tell it's a Wendy's because their burgers were square.
Okay. And what were their buns then, also square?
No, they were round.
Square burger.
In a round bun.
Very interesting.
Tenterson Chamber have tweeted, good afternoon, Vanilla Webb, that's me, and Jules Serkin, that's her. Please can you give a shout-out to a busy chamber currently on a recruitment drive for new members? We certainly can. I'm a member of the Tenterson Chamber of Commerce, and very good it is too. Very good value for money. I recommend that you join. The Tenterson Chamber covers all the villages, towns and areas in the greater Tenterton area. So it covers quite a wide range.
And I think I haven't heard from Tasey this morning, have you? Tracy Ferguson. Tasey 64. She normally, because she would love all this Rochester. I don't think she drinks, actually, but she would still like a mocktail.
She's probably out getting a cocktail, isn't she?
Yeah, mocktail she'd have, I think. Have I got time to read one more before the news?
No, because we're going to go over to the newsroom in 30 seconds.
Okay. So I've got lots to talk to you about after the news.
Have you? Well, Casey Canine's been on.
Oh, has he?
Talking to you. You're not seeing a lot of those, are you?
No.
He says, hi, Jules Serkin. Please, can you give a shout out to the most patient greyhound still waiting to meet the apple of his eye?
Actually, I answered that quite a while back.
Did you?
I sent him a picture of Darcy Greyhound looking out the window when Gavin goes, the new husband goes windsurfing.
Right.
She only really likes Gavin. She didn't really like me much.
No, I don't blame her.
No. She likes men.
Yeah, obviously.
Terrible flirt.
Right, shall we join the newsroom?
Let's find out what's happening. I heard something about monkeypox with Jeremy Vine this morning.
Okay, well, let's
see. I switched him off.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.